It's about 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 9th, 2016. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Mount Zion Police welcome four-legged officer. Jeremy McLean has gone through an adjustment period with his new partner, Saudo. An officer at the Mount Zion Police Department, McLean has undergone 2 months of training with his partner to forge a bond, learning Saudo's quirks and how to manage his temperament. While Saudo is skilled in sniffing out drugs and finding hidden evidence, he is still working on the part about listening and being housebroken. The department has joined its colleagues in the Macon County Sheriff's Office and other nearby municipalities by receiving its own canine in Saudo, a 2-year-old Belgian Malinois, in spring. After spending most of the summer training at the county's canine training facility, Saudo is ready to officially patrol the village. Saudo is pretty hard-headed, but he's come a long way, McLean said. Having a canine for the department was something that has been discussed for years, with Police Chief Adam Skundberg citing benefits such as locating missing people, detecting illegal narcotics, tracking wanted offenders, and even being part of community outreach efforts. When situations have occurred in the past that required a canine, which happens on a weekly basis, Skundberg said that they were at the mercy of what was available. In the past, when we've needed a dog, it depended on whether the county had one available, he said. If they did, great. If they didn't, then we just have to work without one. The main deterrent for getting a canine was the significant startup costs that had officials push aside the idea of having a dog to the future, or whenever a better opportunity presented itself. When a grant from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation for about $80,000 became available earlier this year, Skundberg said that the department realized this could be that opportunity. We decided to pull the trigger on it, Skundberg said. The grant covers the cost of not only the canine, but also the dog's training and to outfit the department with its own canine vehicle, equipped with a kennel in the back. Once awarded with the grant in spring, the department worked with the Macon County Sheriff's Office to find the right dog. That search eventually led to Belgium, home of the Belgian Malinois breed, known for their work with other police forces around the world and the preferred breed for the U.S. Secret Service. The search ended in April when Saudo arrived in Mount Zion and ready for service. The only question next was who would become the handler and partner with the newest member of the police department. When the requests for the role came to Skundberg's office, the police chief knew that McLean was the right fit for it. An 8-year veteran with the department, McLean had spent time training his German short-haired pointer for bird and game hunting. The idea of doing some of that work with Saudo appealed to McLean. I enjoy it, and I've been around training dogs for a while, McLean said. The training did not end with the county's canine program or when McLean is off the clock, as Saudo lives in a kennel built in McLean's backyard, and the two will spend the evenings doing more training to strengthen their relationship. The community has already come to embrace Saudo, and the department recently received a donation from Nestle Purina Pet Care Company for enough dog food to last for at least a year. As Saudo gets more established with the department and with his handler, the hope is that he can be used not only in cases in the village, but to also assist departments in neighboring communities in need of a canine. Saudo can be a real asset, not only to Mount Zion, but for the entire area, Skundberg said. Government and politics. Illinois seeks Medicaid use for mental health, substance abuse. Springfield. Illinois is seeking permission from the federal government to use Medicaid funding to pay for substance abuse and mental health services that typically aren't covered under the health insurance program for the poor. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration is seeking a 5-year waiver from certain Medicaid rules as part of its proposed Health and Human Services transformation, which aims to provide services to the state's most vulnerable residents more efficiently and cost-effectively by focusing on preventative care, public health, and community-based programs and encouraging cooperation among state agencies. The waiver, which wouldn't expand eligibility or increase the amount of federal funding the state receives, would allow Illinois to test new ways of providing services to Medicaid recipients with mental illness and substance abuse problems. While those recipients make up about 25% of the 3.2 million Illinoisans receiving Medicaid, they account for 56% of the spending in the $18 billion per year program. The way that we're spending our scarce resource now is not producing outcomes that are good for the citizens of Illinois, and we need to do something about that, James Dimas, Secretary of the State Department of Human Services, said Thursday at a public hearing on the proposal in Springfield. We have for decades over-relied on deep-end institutional care, and that is prevented us having the resources that were needed to invest in community-based and preventative care. Under the state's proposal, Medicaid money could be used to pay for services such as supportive housing for people with mental illness, job support for people with substance abuse problems, and certain medication-based addiction treatments for inmates nearing release from state prison. The proposal places a particular emphasis on substance abuse treatment at a time when the state is battling a heroin and opioid addiction crisis. From 2011 to 2012, state-funded treatment capacity dropped by more than 50%, a nation-leading decline, according to a report last year from the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University. The state officials believe the proposal would work in concert with new state laws aimed at combating opioid addiction to reverse that trend. Among the services that would be available to Medicaid recipients with substance abuse problems are short-term residential treatment, case management, withdrawal management, and recovery coaching. Law enforcement officials who attended Thursday's hearing praised the proposal. Christian County Sheriff Bruce Kettlecamp, a former Illinois State Police narcotics officer, said he never expected to see a heroin problem in his rural community, but there have been 3 heroin overdose cases in the county so far this year. Christian County has active mental health and drug courts, Kettlecamp said, but participants often have to spend time in the local jail until space becomes available in treatment programs. The area also lacks housing and jobs for people with mental illness and addiction, he added. I hope and pray that this will help us, Kettlecamp said. It sounds like it will. Sarah Howe, CEO of the Illinois Association for Behavioral Health, said the proposal is strong overall. It's fantastic to see a vision that is articulated by the state for behavioral health and so many people behind it in all different facets supporting that, Howe said. But there is room for improvement, she said. For example, Howe said her organization would like to see supportive housing services made available to people with substance abuse problems, as well as those with mental illness. Felicia Norwood, director of the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, said it will take some time for the state to implement the changes if the federal government approves the waiver. Pending federal approval, the changes would be effective July 1st. Part of the process will be taking stock of existing services throughout the state and identifying gaps, Norwood said. The idea is to tailor services to the needs of local communities. We're not asking for kind of one-size-fits-all approach because what's going to work in Bloomington won't work somewhere else, Norwood said. And we want to take into consideration the local service delivery system that's already in place. Federal grand jury indicts Mount Zion man for insurance fraud, Decatur. James P. Smith, who was in jail in connection with 8 felony cases filed in Macon County Circuit Court for allegedly stealing about $400,000 from insurance clients and others, was indicted Wednesday by a federal grand jury. Smith, 60, of Mount Zion, will be arraigned in U.S. District Court, Urbana, on charges alleging he was involved in an insurance fraud scheme, said a news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Central Illinois District. The charges Smith is facing are two counts of mail fraud and one count each of wire fraud and money laundering. Each count is punishable by 20 years in prison. Three of the counts can carry a fine of up to $250,000. The money laundering count carries a fine of up to $500,000, or twice the value of transactions involved, whichever is greater. The arraignment date is yet to be determined, but will likely be within 2 weeks. The investigation, which was led by State's Attorney Investigator David Cook and resulted in the initial arrest of Smith on June 23rd, is being conducted by the FBI along with the Macon County Sheriff's Office and State's Attorney's Office. Smith, whose address is listed on the 5400 block of Troughbur Road, is being held on $235,000 bond. He is charged with defrauding eight or more victims from February 2011 until July 2016. Cases such as his are often transferred from state to federal authorities because they have more resources to handle a large investigation involving many victims. Federal prosecutions often result in longer prison sentences upon conviction. The U.S. Attorney's Office alleges that Smith told clients he was employed by or owned a Decatur insurance agency, acting as an independent agent. He was employed by an independent insurance agency in Decatur until April 2014. As part of his scheme, Smith allegedly solicited clients to purchase life insurance and other insurance policies and financial products. But instead of purchasing the policies or investing their money, Smith allegedly helped himself to their money. In some cases, Smith advised clients to make payments to MSM Incorporated, which he falsely stated were the initials for an insurance or investment company. MSM was actually Main Street Marathon, a Mount Zion gas station Smith owned, the indictment said. Smith used that money to finance the station and make personal mortgage payments. Smith also allegedly cashed out or canceled policies and annuities without his client's permission, using the cash and subsequent premium payments to pay personal attorneys and bankruptcy fees, as well as pay off other clients who he was defrauding. And local briefs for Friday, September 9th. Accessible voting. Macon County Clerk Steve Bean will lead a workshop showing people with disabilities how to use accessible voting machines and explaining what other voting options they have. The workshop will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Tuesday, September 13th at Soyland Access to Independent Living, 2449 Federal Drive. Call SAIL, S-A-I-L, Visual Services Advocate Rich Adams at 217-876-8888. That's 876-8888 or 1-800-358-8080. That's 800-358-8080. AARP Driver Safety. An AARP-sponsored driver safety course approved by the State of Illinois will be held 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday, September 13th at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, room 561. This classroom refresher focuses on motorists 50 or older. There are no tests, and lunch is provided. The cost is $15 for AARP members and $20 for non-members. For more information or to register, call 217-464-2046. That's 464-2046. C is for camping. Rock Springs Nature Center will host children ages 1 to 5 with an adult buddy for camping mini camp from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, September 14th. Campers will climb inside a tent, fish with magnets, and try catching butterflies with nets. The cost is $10 per child. Pre-register online by noon, Monday, September 12th, at MaconCountyConservation.org. That's MaconCountyConservation.org. Urbana. Fraud indictment. A former manager of accused of stealing money from a Mattoon restaurant now faces federal fraud charges in connection with the same alleged scheme. James Michael Hill was indicted by a federal grand jury Wednesday for allegedly defrauding the owners of the Stadium Grill restaurant, 102 Detro Drive, Mattoon. Hill, 39, of Charleston, is accused of sending emails that contained incorrect information about the restaurant's sales to its owners to hide the thefts. According to the indictment, Hill, quote, exposed the Stadium Grill to a potential loss of over $150,000, end quote, from 2007 to 2013, to August 2013. Hill was also charged in Coles County with theft in 2013, alleging he stole money from the restaurant. Hill's first court appearance, in the federal case is October 14th. The next hearing in the Coles County case is December 8th. New equipment for Macon County elections. Decatur. With the election just under 2 months away, Macon County Clerk Steve Bean is hopeful that new equipment will reduce some challenges for voters and election judges. After over a year of discussion, the Macon County Board unanimously approved the purchase of $550,000 of new election equipment with Liberty Systems LLC, which will include dozens of voting machines and ballot scanners. In addition, the county will trade in its current election equipment for $25,000. The new machines will come as a relief to Bean, who announced Thursday that he will not seek re-election, and this will provide years of stability for his successor. I think this will make things a lot easier for everyone involved in the election process, Bean said. It's going to leave the county in great shape. With Thursday night's approval from the full county board, Liberty Systems managing partner Ken Gibson said the machine should begin to arrive next week. The county clerk's office has used a combination of equipment for at least a decade as technology advanced. Bean said the equipment did its job when it first arrived, but struggles arose when state lawmakers passed new voter guidelines that were not all compatible with the equipment. The new machines are much more user-friendly, Bean said, providing large touchscreen voting and various features to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. The hope is that the machines will speed up lines and lessen stress on election judges who must deal with the equipment. The machines will partially be paid for through money collected from permits purchased for the county's wind farm project. The county will enter a payment plan with full payment expected next year through additional money connected to the wind farm project. In crime and courts, father of slain 4-year-old girl facing life in prison, Decatur. The father of four-year-old Amara C. Reynolds, who was beaten to death August 31st in her Decatur home, is facing a prison sentence of 20 years to life after he was arraigned Thursday on two counts of first-degree murder. Daryl A. Reynolds, 29, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court, where the judge handed him the information sheets containing his charges. Reynolds is looking at a possible life sentence instead of the 60-year limit in many first-degree murder cases because the victim was younger than 12, and the death resulted from exceptionally brutal or heinous behavior indicative of wanton cruelty, according to the charging documents filed by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. He is due back in court September 28th for his preliminary hearing. The child's mother, Dalvon Taylor, 26, is scheduled to be arraigned today on one count of endangering the life or health of a child, punishable by a sentence of 2 to 10 years. Law enforcement officials who have seen the autopsy photos of the girl said that there were bruises or scars all over her body. Reynolds, who is being held in jail on a $2 million bond, has retained attorney William Vig of Springfield. Taylor, who is being held on a $500,000 bond, will tell the court today whether she has hired a private attorney. Reynolds confessed to the police that, "I just killed my daughter," quote, during an interview after Amara was transported to Decatur Memorial Hospital in an unresponsive state, said an affidavit by a police detective. She was pronounced dead at 4:51 p.m., August 31st. During the police interview, Reynolds told police he struck Amara so many times with a belt that he lost count. Darrell said he struck Amara in the head, body, and legs with his belt, the detective wrote in his statement. Taylor told police that Reynolds had been abusing their daughter for about 2 years. Dalvin stated the abuse typically consisted of Darrell hitting Amara in the face and torso, hitting her forcefully with a belt numerous times, which caused welts to her arms, back, and legs and torso, severe pinching and grabbing the back of her neck, lifting her up off the ground. Taylor said he also saw Reynolds kick Amara as she lay on the floor. Taylor said Reynolds was also abusive to her, which prevented her from reporting the abuse to police or child protection officials. A police official noted that Reynolds tortured the girl. The affidavit stated that injuries to the side, inside of her upper thigh appear consistent with severe pinch marks that punctured the flesh. In education, Dennis Milliken partnership goes global. Decatur, Cooper Broderick, 7, was full of questions for the South Korean college student with whom he and his family had just been matched for the fall semester. Does she like video games? Does she have two sisters and one brother? Yoo-Jin Jeong, a junior at Milliken University, replied, "Not really and no. The only sibling she has is one brother." She also had some questions for the Brodericks, including Cooper's parents, Jared and Bailey, and siblings, Oliver, 5, and Charlotte, 3. "Have you ever tried kimchi?" she asked. This is a sample of the conversations that took place Thursday evening during the kickoff of an international host family program pairing 12 international students at Milliken with 12 Dennis School families. The idea is for the families to invite their international students for occasional meals and outings to give themselves and their student a deeper understanding of another culture. "Learning doesn't just happen within the four walls of your school," Rafaela Prang, Milliken's Dean of Student Development, told the gathering. "This program is another addition to what has become a robust partnership between Dennis and Milliken. Indeed, the four-year-old partnership got a big boost nearly a year ago when Trevor May, then a senior at Milliken, was hired as partnership liaison. Last year, he helped host middle schoolers on campus for a series of Big Blue Days and helped give them some college buddies in the form of Milliken fraternity and sorority members. Now an MBA student, May continues as liaison and was MC for Thursday's kickoff at Dennis School. This is a very big step for the partnership," he said. Prang told the group that children in grades K through 12 who participate in global learning are 4 times more likely to earn a bachelor's degree than children who do not. She added that Milliken currently has 55 international students representing 28 countries. Nicole Bateman, Community Marketing Manager for the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur in Macon County, was also among Thursday evening speakers and praised the program and its participants. "Many of the families in the room are already Decatur City Limitless Ambassadors," Bateman said. "The international students are our first international ambassadors." Jared and Bailey Broderick said that they wanted to introduce their children to other cultures in much the same way Jared was when his family participated in Decatur's Sister Cities program with Civital Germany, while he was a student at MacArthur High School. Jeong said she wants to learn about a new culture, too, and that she's already charmed by the 3 Broderick children. "They are super cute," she said. Education. Lovington gym boards for sale. Lovington. When Lovington High School was deactivated and students began attending Arthur High School, the old building was torn down to prevent it from being an eyesore. Yorkville Christian Academy bought the flooring and said this spring that they started installing it in their gym because their floor needed to be replaced, said Carol Smith of Lovington. That school's gym is considerably smaller than Lovington High School's gym was, and they had several pallets of floorboards left over once the job was complete. An employee of the Farm Bureau in that county is a Lovington graduate and let the Lovington Alumni Association board know that the boards were for sale. The administrator at Yorkville would have been willing to give them the boards, but it's a small private school, and they hadn't been able to pay the volunteers who installed the new gym floor. By selling the leftover boards, they knew they'd be able to pay those folks. We bought 400 square feet, Smith said. We didn't need all seven pallets, so we emailed alumni to see if they'd like to buy any. 2 or 3 weeks ago, we drove to Yorkville and we loaded the pallets onto a trailer and brought it back, and we started filling out the orders. Bobby Miller bought enough to create a miniature gym floor on a wall of his home where he plans to display his trophies and other souvenirs from his high school days. People are making picture frames and end tables, and some are going to make small models of the gym floor out of it, Smith said. I was a volleyball coach at Lovington for several years, and I thought that it would be nice to have a piece of the gym floor. We decided to see how much interest there was. Homecoming is Saturday, September 10th, and the Alumni Association wanted to make boards available for alumni to purchase at $3 a square foot, Smith said. They'll have the trailer set up during the parade on Saturday in downtown Lovington. Smith joked to her husband that she wanted to buy enough to redo the floor at home. He gave the look, she said with a laugh. In state news, U of Illinois president receives $100,000 bonus, Urbana. University of Illinois president Timothy Colleen will be paid a $100,000 performance bonus for his first year on the job. University trustees voted at their regular meeting Thursday to award Killeen the bonus. Under his contract, the bonus was the maximum Killeen could have received for reaching performance goals. His salary is $600,000 per year. Killeen leads the university system and its campuses in Urbana-Champaign, Chicago, and Springfield. He finished his first year on the job in May. The university has increased enrollment on all three campuses during that period. Killeen also pushed for tuition freezes that trustees agreed to in the past two academic years. Killeen also pushed cost-cutting measures intended to help the three campuses deal with diminished state funding and the ongoing state budget crisis. Killeen, who succeeded retiring President Robert Easter, previously was Vice Chancellor for Research at the State University of New York, a system of 64 campuses and more than 400,000 students. Illinois has three main campuses and 78,000 students. That's all we have time for with the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 9th, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.